Welcome to Moolala, Money Made Simple on SiriusXM. Here's your host, Bruce Sellery.
Hello, I'm Bruce Sellery. This is Moolala, Money Made Simple. Coming up on the program this week, imagine if you could fire your kids for not finishing their chores. Is that a thing? Jody Swan says it is. She's the creator of the Hire and Fire Your Kids app, a new game that aims to teach kids about responsibility and the value of money. Jody joins us to talk about how the app works. Then budgeting for your bong. Now that cannabis is legal in Canada, you might want to factor weed into your spending plans, at least according to Bridget Casey. She's the founder of the Money After Graduation blog. She'll be here with some tips on how you can add cannabis to your budget. And different countries have different banking systems. If you're a newcomer to Canada, you may not be familiar with how things work here. Moving to a new country is hard as it is, but to make things a little bit easier on the financial side of things, Enoch Omalulu has a financial checklist for newcomers to Canada. He is the founder of Savvy New Canadians. Plus, ABC Life Literacy offers a Money Matters program for Canadians with diverse abilities. We'll talk to the their executive director. And a company that uses a four-quadrant approach to change the way families engage with their wealth. All that is ahead. Let's get started. Canadians can now buy cannabis products for recreational use legally. You might have heard, right? Well, whether you're buying cannabis by the gram, investing in CBD oil, or purchasing accessories, the cost can really add up, especially if you're a regular user of these products. So how do you factor cannabis into your budget? Money After Graduation's Bridget Casey is here to give us a rundown. Hello there.
Hi, Bruce.
I am still not used to this legalization thing. I get it in theory, but it's kind of weird in practice because of the time in which I grew up. Like, it was full on illegal in the 80s, which is why I think this is such a great article that you've done for the blog. How much do some of these cannabis products cost for non-users like me? Some of our listeners would be like, Bruce, they're going to ship me a fuchsia bong just so I'm educated. I don't know.
It depends what you're buying. If you're buying actual cannabis, edibles, oils, or cannabis to smoke, it's ranging anywhere from like $10 a gram to maybe $30 or $50 for a vial of cannabis oil. But if you're getting the actual product to smoke or store or consume your cannabis, those run anywhere from like $20 for a pipe to $300 for a high-end bong.
Now, it's legal across Canada. You're in Alberta, and the distribution plan differs depending on where you live. And I also know many people still are chopping the black market. They're meeting people in the dark alley. How accessible is it to buy? Any idea how much price differs across the country?
I'm not totally sure how it varies province to province. It does seem that the provincial distributors are selling cannabis for about $10 to $13 a gram. I've only ever purchased from those sources. I don't even know where to get it on the black market, but I hear that the black market is cheaper. I just don't necessarily know if it's worth it to go that route. Like, I just personally feel safer from the government sources, even if they are slightly more expensive.
One of the things that people talk about is that the confidence that they have in the dosage they receive is higher through those channels, which can be a big issue. You've got four ways in that article to fit cannabis into your budget. First is to change your intake method. What's the best cannabis intake method in terms of affordability and quality?
It depends on what your personal preference as well. I know, like, I personally consume cannabis by smoking it through joints, which is technically one of the least effective methods, but it's like very cheap in my opinion because you just roll them and go. But if you want to get like your best dollar per hit cost, then a bong is actually your best investment if you're willing to pay the upfront cost for an investment that will last a long time.
Right. A fuchsia bong, I think, is, you need to be specific there. It's got to be fuchsia, right? Yeah. Your second tip was about setting cannabis guidelines. What does that mean?
That just just means on how much you're using it. And I actually do want to give credit to one of my staff writers, Megan. She's actually the one that wrote this post for me, so I'm not the author behind it. But she does lay out that you should have some guidelines of how much you consume, because you still want to be using cannabis responsibly, even though it's legal. I mean, we have to treat it somewhat the same as alcohol, where you're not going to drink throughout the whole day, because that's bad for your body and also bad for your budget. And you should treat cannabis the same way, where it's something that maybe you plan to consume and you only use at times when it doesn't interfere with other things, and that way it doesn't wreck your budget either.
Your third way is avoid buying cannabis online. How come?
Well, that is actually one of the easier ways to get it through some of the provincial distributors, but the shipping costs are just wild. Like, it's way easier if you can actually go directly to a dispensary, and then you're not paying any shipping costs, particularly if you're buying a small amount. Like, for me, a gram of cannabis actually lasts a really long time, so I don't want to pay $10 of shipping
for
$10 of cannabis. So it's way easier to just go to a dispensary, get the amount that you want, and avoid any of the extra costs, and plus the waiting for it to arrive in the mail.
You're saying that my Amazon Prime membership does not cover cannabis or related products?
It doesn't, not yet.
At some point in the future. The fourth thing that in this article that Megan mentioned was claiming cannabis on your taxes. What do you need to do in order to do that?
In order to be able to claim cannabis on your taxes, you have to be consuming it for medicinal purposes, and you have to actually have a prescription from your physician. Depending what you're using cannabis for, this may or may not be easy to get. As you know, it's now a treatment for a variety of ailments. So if you get prescription cannabis from your doctor, you can actually claim that just as you would any other medical expense.
Now, I was surprised that the article didn't mention growing it at home. How come?
I think that's just tedious. I don't know how much that actually saves, especially because you do need a little bit of like a hydroponic setup. And you have to think that's also like energy and time consumption on your part. And you still have to actually buy the cannabis plants or the seeds to start you off. So, I mean, personally, if you want to sample cannabis the same way you sample wine, you want to try different strains, you want to do different things, it's nice to just go to a dispensary and pick up what you want then, instead of growing just one strain that you have to maintain in your backyard. I mean, it's the same reason I don't grow vegetables on my balcony. It's easier to go to the grocery store.
Well, I mean, it's quite convenient to have leaf lettuce available at all times, but I understand. I understand the complexity. Now, we joke a little bit about this. How much material is cannabis to the average Canadian's budget? Because the dollars that you're talking about seem fairly doable for most people, like less than what they might spend if they're going to go to the food court to buy lunch.
Oh, totally. Like, cannabis is actually surprisingly affordable, and it's especially affordable if you're comparing it in the context of alcohol. I know personally for me, my cannabis consumption has replaced a lot of my alcohol consumption. And I mean, a $10 gram of cannabis lasts me way longer than a $30 bottle of wine. So it will actually probably be good for your recreational budget if you're using it to swap out some other items that you might be consuming otherwise.
It sounds like a topic for another article on your site. How you could like horse trade your vices so you can choose the cheapest ones, probably cheaper than gambling. I don't know.
Oh, for sure. And it's like more relaxing. There's less consequences overall. I mean, cannabis is really great for your budget and most of your life.
Yeah. Now, you are younger than I am. I know that empirically. And your generation probably thinks about cannabis a little bit differently than my generation does. What have you noticed about the stigma? Would you say it is still present, or did it evaporate the day the laws changed?
No, I think it's still present. I think it's getting better. I mean, I was actually one of the people that held a very strong stigma against cannabis consumption before it was legal. And now I'm like a casual user. So even I've come a long way in the time that it's become legalized. But I don't think that's true overall. I think people are still wary about it. There is some negative connotations. And it's almost one of those things where you kind of have to try it to realize that maybe it's not as bad as you think. I think generations are like my generation is maybe a little bit more forgiving about it, but it's not wholly unfamiliar to the boomer generation. I mean, like my mom is also consuming cannabis again now because it's legal and available. And she had no stigma to it because she used it when she was much younger.
Right.
There was, of course, like a 40-year gap when she didn't because it was illegal.
Or at least that's what she's telling you. And we'll just go with that. We'll just go with that. She might have been a groovy earth mama all through the 90s and 2000s until the legalization. Because I don't know.
I don't think so.
Say hi to your mom for me. I'm sure she's thrilled you've included her in this conversation.
I know, right?
Bridget, thank you very much for joining us.
Yeah, of course. It was great to be here.
Bridget Casey is the founder of Money After Graduation. Her site has all sorts of content, including interesting articles on things like how to budget for cannabis consumption.
You're listening to Moolah Law, Money Made Simple, with Bruce Ellery on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
We all want our kids to learn how to be responsible and to be independent. Teaching your kids about the value of money, of course, can help them achieve those things and much more, preparing them for the real world. What better way to teach your kids about money than by playing a game? Kids love games. Jody Swain is the founder of the Hire and Fire Your Kids app. And in this game, you have the power to hire your kids for chores around the house and then fire them if they don't follow the family values and expectations. I love this. Jody joins us now to tell us more about the app and how it works. Hello there.
Hi, Bruce. How are you?
I want the background first here because I looked online and I found this picture of you, your husband, and like, I don't know, 13 children.
Yes.
Yeah, it's like the Von Trapp family. The blended family is a part of how you came up with this idea.
For sure, yes. So working, I didn't really spend a lot of the time with the family, working nights and weekends. And when I found myself at home with my youngest, who's now four, you see everything.
Yeah.
And the kids were driving me bonkers and I knew I couldn't handle that. So I thought, why not look at the home as though it was my job for the year? And so I came up with this game where I could hire the kids for jobs that I was prepared to reward them for. And we set our family expectations as to here's what we need you to do to contribute as to being part of our home, such as you make your bed, you don't hit your brother, you flush the toilet, things like that. And we had a family meeting, rolled it out, and voila, it was a game changer in our home for the 9 months that we played.
Now, it is an app. You have launched it as an app. The hire part, I completely get.
Yes.
The fire part, I don't quite get. Tell me what you mean by that.
So we asked the families to take a look at your family values and the expectations you have in your home that are unpaid. So as I said, making your bed every day.
Not hitting your brother.
Not hitting your brother, things like that. And so when the kid comes across, when they basically don't follow one of those expectations, the parent basically just takes their phone and snaps a picture of it. And it gets sent to the kid and gives them a warning X. And so in the app, you have a choice as to how many warnings you want to give your kids before they're fired. So in our home, it's four. So the fourth time a picture's been taken gets sent to the child as, you better be careful. You're getting these warning Xs. You get fired. And the fired is a combination of bonuses. So there's bonuses you can set for your children if they don't get fired. But there's also a consequence that was set at your family meeting. So the app is sort of in partnership with the website because that's where all the tutorials are as to making sure you are having your family meetings, you are sharing your family values. And so the kids are aware of what that fired means with the consequence because as the X's are coming, oh my gosh, I've got one X left.
Yeah.
And then my phone's getting taken away or I don't get to play with my friends this weekend. So it just drives the awareness in the home around your expectations. And, you know, like in the real world, if you're getting measured on things, things tend to happen. It's the same thing in the home.
How does this differ versus any of the other 12,000 apps out there to help your kids learn about money and manage things like allowances?
Yes. So the one piece I really wanted was to have the kids taking the initiative. I didn't want the parents to say, I need you to dust the house today. I need you to clean the bathroom today. I need you to make your bed today. I really wanted it the kids to take the initiative to apply for the jobs. So the parent basically decides what they're prepared to reward. And then the kid goes in and says, I will do this job. I will do this job. Mm-hmm. And then we at Hire and Fire, the app, does the reminding and nagging for the parents. So it really is a cool concept because the parents are saying, you know what? I don't have to do a whole lot with the app. Mm-hmm. The app's pretty much taking care of it. And I'm getting to spend more quality time with my kids and enjoying my kids.
Now, when you say the app does it, does this mean all of the participating children need the app on a device?
So you can play the paper version, which we have available on site, which is like on your fridge. With the app version, they would have to have a device. So they can use it on the web app version. So any device, an iPod, an iPad, a tablet.
Your youngest is four.
She's
Do
four,
all
yes.
the rest of the kids, I'm assuming she doesn't have her own
she
device.
She doesn't. Well, she has a family tablet, which she uses, which is so funny. I didn't think that she would. I was planning to keep her on the paper version. But it's amazing how quickly these kids pick up. Yeah. And she'll go in and change her character, and we'll sit together and go, okay, which jobs do you want to apply for this week? Because, you know, things like the ice cream truck, for example, she needs to use her kids' cash for that. That's not something that we are paying. So we're trying to teach our kids the difference between their wants and their needs, and they have to earn their wants playing Hire and Fire.
One of the big questions in the world of allowance is whether chores should be included or excluded. So I subscribe to the view
yes.
that chores are excluded
yes.
and money is simply a tool to help them learn to use it. Chores are a part of being a member of the family.
Right.
Where are you on that whole spectrum of where chores fit and what's paid for?
So we kind of have both in there, and that's kind of what the parents like is the customization, is they can sort of choose. So if you have chores on there that you do not want to pay your kids for, those would be part of your expectations in your home.
I see.
If you have chores that you're prepared to pay, you can pay dollars or points in the app, those would be on your jobs in the app.
On the website, you've got templates to
yes.
download. What are some of those templates? What do they look like?
So on the jobs, templates would be cut the grass, trim the grass, pick the weeds, wash the cars, things like that would be the jobs. Laundry is one of them that are on there. Cook a meal for the family. On the expectations, it's the things that sort of drive you crazy. If you had the ideal kid, what would that look like? So again, the things like we shared, don't hit your brother, keep your hands to yourself, get yourself ready for school on time, unpack your bags when you get home from school. So all the things that you want to sort of have your kids be ready for when they do get it on their own, so that they can make their own meals, they can do their own laundry, and they don't need mom or dad to be the
It's a great metaphor. It has so many applications, but there are limits to it, right? Like, you're not actually firing your child
no.
because you still need, you might, they might be on probation.
Yes.
They might be on like a learning and development plan,
right.
but they're still in the house
they
unless
are.
You advocate they,
yes.
they go live under a
yeah,
bridge.
Yeah, no, there's no unions. There's no.
So the metaphor is not complete. What are some of the limitations to this approach?
So again, every family is different, and you know, it really comes down to the leader of the home, which is the parents. And so they can take however they want with Hire and Fire and really customize it to make it their own. So the limits, I guess, would be I guess the consequence. I'm trying to think of something that came across that didn't really happen. I guess if the kid was fired and they didn't have their money for that particular week, it's sort of showing them with a delayed gratification, right? So I have
you make them sleep in the garage.
Yeah, pretty
is
much.
That what?
Now
you do have kids in all phases and stages,
yes.
given that you've got a 4-year-old all the way up to what, a 20?
23.
Right.
Yes.
Is the 23-year-old still on the program?
No. He actually never played.
When did he? Oh,
he never
was
played.
Sold
he was
already.
So gone when it played. So the 19-year-old, I think, stopped playing when he was. He's going to be 20 in September. When he was 18, as soon as they get a job, essentially, that's when you sort of lose a little bit
right.
of that.
They're
because
like, oh, they have other money.
Yeah, because
does that mean they can hit their brother freely once they have a job?
No, there's still consequences there. But yeah, it just what we found is it's just a game that you're able to play, both parent and kids, and we get X's too as parents. We can get fired
really?
Too.
What
yes.
do you get X's for?
So I'm actually pretty good, but my husband
is it like the equivalent of a does your husband is there a swear jar?
That's exactly what he gets
it is,
his X's
eh?
for. Yes.
And so does your kid take a photo of him after he's sworn?
No. So they'll just send the message. Sometimes they'll try, but it's typically past that point. But yeah, if we get fired.
That would be a great viral video.
Well,
they
you know what?
Catch your
this
husband
is the minimum
on a swearing
viable
jag.
Product, but eventually we could absolutely get there with the technology.
Now,
these
what
days.
Is the automation of the technology? So you describe taking a photo
yes.
of. How does that play out?
So if, for example, if my daughter didn't make her bed, take a picture of it. If she was in school, if she came out at the end of the day and opened her phone, she would see that X and the picture of the actual her bed not being made and a message. So the whole piece that we're trying to do is we really want parents to do more recognizing of their kids.
Are you taking that photo in the app or how does it or do you have
in
to text
moment.
It to the app?
No, in the app. So you
so
take
you're
a picture.
In the app, you take a picture and it automatically
it'll
sends
say,
it.
It'll say, who is this against? And you'll pick the kid. It has avatars for all the kids. So
right.
Nicole. And then what's the reason you're giving her this warning? She didn't make her bed. So they're all like based on your template, it'll pop up and then send away.
How do you celebrate strengths? Because we know in terms of, you know, behavioral modification,
yes.
there is punishing, weaknesses, and there is also celebrating strengths. Do
yes.
more of what they're good at.
Right. And we fully believe recognizing is the one piece that we're finding parents are loving with this, because typically when you recognize your kids, they scored a goal or they got a good grade. But with this, they're participating, contributing to the home more than they ever have.
Do you take photos of that?
Yes. Yes,
okay,
you can.
Okay, so you take a photo. Look at that bed. It's made.
And messages or even just the actual like high fives. Like they, even at the team meetings, you celebrate at your team meetings, which is the payday, right? When payday comes.
Right.
Because it's all based on, you know, pay periods and employees of the month. And so that's when all our celebration happens.
Do your children think you're ridiculous and infuriating because of this? Because I think my kid would be like, you are ridiculous.
Well, it's funny. I keep going, you know what? We're testing. I use that a lot. But I was just really pleasantly surprised when, again, the testimonials came through because I was worried. Like, maybe this is just me. But it really, they're bearing with me. My 11-year-old's kind of done with the social media. That's been the hardest piece for me is to get this out there. I've had to put myself out there.
Right.
And she's not a fan, and I'm okay with that. Like, we were on Dragon's Den, and she's like, I don't want to go on Dragon's Den. Like, I'm out, which is okay. I don't want to be on there either, but you got to do what you got to do sometimes.
Yeah.
So.
Jody, thank you very much.
You're very welcome, Bruce.
Jody Swain, the founder of the Hire and Fire Your Kids app. Jeez, we got to try that. Stay with us. Coming up next, we'll talk to Hedelia Yassiri from Fourth Lane Partners about their four-quadrant approach to wealth. And later, the latest Money Matters program from ABC Life Literacy Canada. Now, here's a tip for you. I won't fire you if you don't do it, but surely this would be a great way to spend your commute. You could listen to the show anytime you want. Go to any of the podcast platforms, subscribe, and the next episode will arrive straight to your device. You can listen to us anywhere. Stick around. We'll be right back after the break.
You're listening to Moolah La, Money Made Simple, with Bruce Ellery on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
There are many investment management companies out there to choose from these days, but finding one that listens to the specific financial needs of your entire family can be a bit difficult. Fourth Lane Partners is a multifamily office that claims to change the way families engage with their wealth and with each other. And they do this through something that they call the four-quadrant approach. Hedelia Yassiri is the head of strategic wealth planning at Fourth Lane Partners, and she joins us now to tell us more about it. Hello there.
Hello.
You're a new firm. Why does the world need another investment firm? There are so many of them.
There are many investment firms and there are many family offices. I believe that we have a differentiated offering because we don't just focus on investments or wealth administration. A lot of family offices out there say they do it all, but we truly do. And we do it through our approach, which is concentrated on four quadrants through which we help our clients.
So you got four quadrants. We're going to come to financial wealth, the one most people think of when they think of an investment firm. But I want to start with one that you call values wealth. What do you mean by that?
Values wealth is what we have to help clients learn the tools to be the best stewards of their wealth. So this has to do with family education. And it's education across many areas, whether it's their family culture, impact philanthropy, their mind and body wellness, education and platforms. That's what we mean.
Number two, physical and mental wealth. Is there like a personal trainer in your offices at all time? Am I going to be doing curls if I come by for an impromptu consultation?
That would be wonderful, but we do have a meditation area.
So ooh, for clients or for staff or for both?
For both.
Anybody who wants it.
Anybody who wants it. You can even drop in, have a matcha latte and come and join us in our meditation
space. In all seriousness, what is the link? What is the link between physical and mental wealth and this, you know, broader view of wealth?
I think you need to be well in your body and your mind in order to perform optimally in your life, and that includes managing your family's assets.
Now, one of the things that you did, one of the big things you did to come up with these four areas was a listening tour. So you went around and talked to a whole bunch of clients and asked them a whole bunch of questions. What did you learn from that?
Well, not only did we ask a bunch of clients, we engaged centers of influence, whether they're in the insurance investment world, as well as at our competition, people in technology, academicians, and so on, in the U.S., in Canada, in Asia, and Australia and Europe. And here's what we heard. Three things. People are worried about risk, whether it's political due to the rise of populism, taxation schemes, emotional risk, people are feeling more stressed and less secure, and market risk. So particularly in Canada, asset classes are expensive and even worse, they correlate with each other and people are overweight in Canada. And then technology risk. will their operating company be disrupted? Is their data safe when it comes to technology? Do their kids have jobs in the future? So that's the first area that they told us about. The second area is that wealth managers need to engage with the whole family. So there's an outdated notion that the patriarchs make all the decision. In the next 10 years, 70% of businesses will have transferred. Out of those, two-thirds will be carried on by the next generation that are going to take over the helm, and they need to be educated and put in good stead. And then women. Women in 2020, which is next year, they'll control $72 trillion U.S., which is 32% of the global wealth. And then finally, we learned that not one size fits all.
Yeah.
You can't take a product-based approach and jam a quote-unquote solution to clients. Everything has to be bespoke and customized.
Yeah.
The path to failure is assuming that you know the client, that you know their need.
Right.
And the path to failure is to assume every member of the family thinks the same way and toes the same line.
And this is a luxury of time that you can spend because of the asset level at which you're engaging. So your clients wouldn't have $100,000, they would have what? $50 million, $100 million? What would be the ballpark assets that a client that would come to you would have?
So it's not assets, it's net worth. Most of our clients are entrepreneurs and business operators. So up to 80-90% of their net worth is in their operating company as opposed to liquid assets. And our clients tend to be in the $50 to $500 million range.
Yeah. The third part of the quadrant approach is relationship wealth. And I think at the, you know, in the more mass market investment firms, they try and talk about intergenerational wealth transfer and engaging Gen 2 and all that stuff. But with family offices, it really matters. It's a core part of the business because you're talking about, geez, maybe my daughter's going to take over this business that I spent my whole life building. Tell us a bit about that relationship wealth piece and how it manifests with your clients.
Absolutely. So relationship wealth is not just our relationship with the clients. It's our relationship with each other as partners in the firm. Every single person who's at Fourth Lane is a partner in the business. We hold equity. It's the relationship with the clients as well as clients with each other. Oftentimes, these families are highly sought after. Their doors being knocked on by many people, and they tend to be isolated, particularly G2 and G3. Here are some of the things that clients can expect when they have a relationship with us. So we offer a family office university. We literally, it's an MBA. We train the next generation, whether it comes to investments, planning, family engagement, education, whatever they need, they sit with us. We have not just an open architecture, but an optimal architecture. We have such a global Rolodex. Executives come and sit with us, chat with our clients and our friends at Fourth Lane all the time. So you can, there's someone you need to meet or want to meet in a particular sector, we'll connect you with them. And also, clients are, especially if they made their wealth from their family businesses, they're very sector focused and specific, and they have expertise in that. So what we do is we introduce them to families that complement them, other sectors. So particularly in Toronto or Vancouver, a lot of families have built their net worth from real estate, but there's med tech and there's other technologies. So we're introducing people to different families who found their success in other arenas.
Interesting.
And they feel very comfortable having a sense of community because they're going through the same challenges in their relationship and their intergenerational wealth transfer.
So we talked about values wealth, physical and mental wealth, relationship wealth, and financial wealth, which is really, as I said off the top, where most people tend to focus. You talk about that in the context of freedom. You're not, at least in your marketing verbiage, it's not about rate of return and performance. It's about freedom. That's a very important distinction. Why did you choose to make it?
Because that's the way life should matter. Because it's not about a rate of return that's indexed to an imaginary benchmark or someone else's benchmark. This is a goals-based approach. So let's call the items or the goals buckets. You could have a bucket for cash flow over the next 36 months. You could have a bucket for retirement planning, maybe never. You can have a bucket for philanthropy and an auxiliary business, or you're taking over something, and you're free to do whatever you want within these various goals and tranches.
Interesting. Well, thank you for joining us to talk about the four quadrant approach. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Adelia Yassiri is head of strategic wealth planning at Fourth Lane Partners. She was here to talk about their four quadrant approach. That's hard to say. Stay with us. Coming up later, we'll take Jody Swain, the founder of the Hire and Fire Your Kids app, through our Moolala questionnaire. But next, Emok Omolulu from Savvy New Canadians is here to tell us about his financial checklist for newcomers to Canada. There's a lot of pronunciation for me to talk through today. Jeez. If you have missed an episode of Moolala, see, I can pronounce that. You can go to our website. You can go to a podcast provider and download the full podcast. Write a review. Subscribe to the next episode so it arrives right on your device. Stick around. We'll be right back after the break.
You're listening to Moolala, Money Made Simple, with Bruce Ellery on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
Moving to a completely new country is tough. One of the many challenges is figuring out how to manage your money, especially when the companies can be different, the customs can be different. Enoch Omolulu is the founder of Savvy New Canadians, and he has created a financial checklist for newcomers to Canada to make it a little bit easier. He joins us now to take us through his financial checklist. Enoch, hello.
Hi, Bruce.
You arrived in Canada in 2011 from Nigeria. Tell us about what that was like for you when it came to your personal finances.
Well, for one, everything was different. So when it comes to the investments, the accounts, the banking accounts, the system in general, the personal finances in general were much different. And there is really no formal avenue to learn these things.
So that is, I assume that's why you decided to start your blog, Savvy New Canadians. Am I right?
Yes, absolutely. Yes. So basically, when I over time, I kind of realized that there's a gap in there for newcomers where they actually need to catch up. And I did think that starting a personal finance blog focused on newcomers would be useful for everybody else.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that you have come up with is a financial checklist for newcomers to Canada. There's a whole bunch of items on it here. And for someone who was born and raised in Canada, they lived here their entire life, they may think, really? You have to talk about that? But as you say, things are very, very different. Item number one, open a bank account. What are the challenges that a newcomer to Canada might face when it comes to that, you know, what to a lifetime Canadian might seem like a really simple task?
Well, really, I think the first thing there is just sometimes the difference is even in the spelling. Like for me, the first time I saw checking, I wasn't too sure what it meant.
Right. We spelt it wrong.
Really?
We spelt it wrong here in Canada.
Yeah, so starting with that, and then one other thing I found to be useful for newcomers is the fees. Like sometimes these fees are a little bit exorbitant, to be honest, for the traditional banking. So basically showing them the options, the fee-free options or low-fee options are alternative available through the credit unions, digital banks, and even some traditional banks.
So open a bank account was number one. Your second piece of the checklist was build your credit score. Was this something that was a new concept for you, or had you even considered the importance of this back in Nigeria?
No, this was absolutely new. So the first time I heard about credit scores was when I got into Canada, and nobody really explained it. I just kind of realized over time that we get aggressively marketed with credit cards, but about the credit score and the potential impact this could have on your finances in general.
Also on your list, becoming a homeowner, planning for your kids' education, getting an education, saving and investing smartly. Now, that's an entire we could spend days on that topic alone. What is the single most important thing that a new Canadian should know about investing smartly that they might not know?
Starting off with minimizing their costs and also basically starting off early. So using time to the advantage, what we call the compounding interest. So starting off investing as soon as they can using the available non-registered accounts like the TFSA, the RRSPs, and importantly also minimizing their investment. Mm.
New Canadians is a very broad phrase. It is a very diverse population, not just in terms of language and culture, but in terms of wealth and employment prospects. And for some, the level of trauma that they experienced before they left their former country. What do you think needs to be customized based on circumstance when you think about that checklist? What's the nuance of it that would be different from someone who arrived like you did from Nigeria versus someone who, you know, maybe grew up and didn't speak a word of English before they landed in Canada?
I think in addition to just the general personal finances, basically having somebody break down what these things mean. So when you talk about the TFSA, I was in Canada for 3 years before I actually understood what a TFSA meant, or I actually even realized there was an account like that. So I think basically providing opportunities for people to actually get some nitty-gritty details about finances in general, and people not just assuming that, you know what, they should know about the TFSA. It's all about the place, all about the internet. Or they should know about the RRSP. And also, I find a lot of this documentation online provided by the government is full of legalese. So people just go in there, it's like so confusing to understand, and they just, you know what, I give up. I'll just put my money in a savings account.
Number 9 on your checklist is to protect yourself from fraud. And this one I have so much passion for, because I think one of the things that new Canadians would have to deal with is the risk of feeling stupid or the shame of getting caught up in fraudulent activity that might be even more pronounced than for someone who's lived here all their lives and who's got some sensitivity to it already. What guidance do you have for new Canadians on this one in particular?
I think the starting point is to question everything. So I have met people who have fallen victim to the CRA, income tax type, and immigration scams, and more importantly, employment scams, because people are looking for jobs. Once they get this call, oh, you know what, I have a job for you. I want you to send me $300 to do this and that. People fall for it. So I think the starting point is question everything, and even though you're in Canada, there are still bad actors out there.
Yeah, we have criminals here too. We have pretty mountains and great lakes, but we have criminals here too. One last question before we go. What are some of the resources you could recommend to newcomers who want to learn more about how finances work in Canada? Are there websites in addition to yours? Are there courses? What else could people do?
So I think like for me personally, starting off with just reading Rob Carrick's Globe and Mail column.
Yep.
And a few other bloggers was very helpful for me starting off. So I think basically just opening your mind and looking out for what is out there for information. So starting off with, for example, like the one I just mentioned, the Globe and Mail, Financial Post, and a few other bloggers out there. And from there, building that foundation and also using all the available resources provided by the government.
Really helpful. Well, Enoch, thank you for the work that you're doing with your blog, Savvy New Canadians. I am quite convinced that you are making a difference with that. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much, Bruce, for having me on your call.
Enoch Omolulu is the founder of Savvy New Canadians. On that site, he has created a very simple and straightforward financial checklist for newcomers to Canada. Check it out. And also check out Rob Carrick's Globe. He's the best. Stay with us. Coming up next on Moolala, money matters for people with diverse abilities. Executive Director of ABC Life Literacy Canada, Mac Rogers, is here to tell us all about his latest program. And we take Jody Swain through the Moolala questionnaire. Enjoying the show so far today? I hope so. Join in the conversation. You can follow me at Bruce Selry on Twitter, Bruce Selry Moolala on Facebook, or ask at moolala.ca. Ask at moolala.ca is the email address. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Moolala, Money Made Simple with Bruce Ellery on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
Understanding personal finance is important at any stage and in any circumstances, and it can be tough to gather that knowledge and those skills. ABC Life Literacy Canada offers its Money Matters programs to help Canadians build these financial literacy skills. They're designed for a number of different groups to help them learn the basics and beyond. The newest addition to this program is the Money Matters for People with Diverse Abilities. Mac Rogers, Executive Director of ABC Life Literacy Canada, joins us now to tell us how it works. Hello there.
Hello, how are you?
Tell us first off about ABC Life Literacy Canada. What is the organization? And then we'll get into that specific program.
Sure. We're a national charity, and what we do is we develop programs for literacy learners or newcomers, Indigenous learners, learners with barriers all across the country. What we do is we create the programs, and then we leverage our partners out in the community to actually deliver the programs.
And when you say people with diverse abilities, what does that mean?
So often people would say people living with disabilities or people with who have disabilities. This could include mental, like intellectual disabilities. It include trauma. Anything that kind of impedes their learning is what we're talking about here.
Now, the program has three modules to start: opening a bank account, ways to pay, needs, wants, and spending plans. Take us through a bit of a sense of the curriculum.
Sure. So it's really about building the foundations of financial literacy. So where we start with is a lot of people within this community may not be banking quite as regularly as other communities. So what we really want to do is start with what is a bank? How does it work? What are the kind of the main features and products that are most beneficial to people with diverse abilities? Then we start getting into things about how you spend your money. So this is where we get into ways to pay. So this could include cash, and there's some exercises on making change and that sort of thing, right up to check writing and what a debit card or credit card is. And then we start figuring out, working with the learners about what they want to spend their money on. So now they know how to spend their money, then they get into needs, wants, and spending plans, or sometimes called budgets.
How do you think about the program design, given this population in particular? I mean, if you have a population that is homogeneous, you can sort of be like, okay, here's what we need. It needs to have this amount of visuals because they're all visual learners, and it needs to be done in this way because of how this particular population learns. You don't have the benefit of that when you're talking about people with diverse abilities, because by definition, it is diverse. How do you think about the pedagogy given that challenge?
So that's a great question. So we think about it, it almost includes both the content and the pedagogy, to be totally honest with you, because their lived experience may be very different within the classroom and also different outside of the classroom. So they may have control or access to only a small part of their financial spending plans, and they may have total control. It really depends. So we want to make sure that we're building content that is relevant to the most amount of people that we can, so that we include things like how to write a check in case they're writing their own checks and for rent, but we also include things about making change. So if their spending is predominantly done in retail settings, then we want to make sure that they have those skills as well. Now, the pedagogy itself, the really interesting piece with this is that we actually went back to the learners and the professionals that work with adults with diverse abilities to give us the best way to interact with them. So the work really came out of both ourselves as well as our sponsors. The TD Bank has done a lot of work with this group in the States, and they provided some core materials, which was really strong and allowed us to kind of build off of that and test some of their pedagogical theories. And what we found is much of the activities are interactive, they're conversational, they're very... We make sure we frame them in such a way that people can talk about their own experiences so that they can share their best practices, because that interaction between learners is as or more important than what the actual content that we're giving them is.
I know you can't include everything. It's three modules. It's not the Earth, Moon, and the Sun. But how did you think about fraud? And I ask because fraud is particularly concerning for vulnerable populations, of which people with diverse abilities may be.
Yes, you are 100% correct on that. So the way we came at it is we actually had five modules planned. The other two modules that are still in development are using an ATM, and understanding your paycheck. And then we actually added a sixth module exactly to that point. So money management security is what the kind of the working title of it is. That product will be coming out in late fall, early winter. And it's really focusing on fraud, scams, those types of things, with paying attention to all different levels of fraud, from investment fraud to retail fraud, and just understanding the different ways that it can come at you online in a digital environment or in you know, your everyday interactions.
Our program airs from coast to coast to coast, and many of our listeners do not live in major centers. How do these programs get delivered? And if you want one in your neck of the woods, how do you make that happen?
Sure. So what we do is, so when you're talking about delivering programs for people with diverse abilities, you have to make sure it's accessible. So the best way to make it accessible is to have paper-based resources and then deliver the programs in community organizations that are already working with people with diverse abilities. And the reason we do this is that some learning centers aren't accessible. They don't have wheelchair ramps. They don't have, you know, the support systems in place to support people with diverse abilities. So what we do is we partner with those community organizations. So if you're already attending a learning center of any kind and you're interested in taking this course, just have your instructor give ABC a call, look, go to our website, abcmoneymatters.ca, and they can sign up. It's all free, and we'll get the resources out to them right away.
You also have a free downloadable guide for caregivers. What will they find in the guide?
So the caregiver guide is a little bit more detailed, and it includes a bit more about benefits and products that are available for people with diverse abilities. So we do talk a little bit about budgeting and spending, but where we really kind of dig into it a bit more is talking about specific planning, government benefits and tax credits. So this could be the disability tax credit, the child disability benefit, the Canada caregiver credit, as well as, of course, the Registered Disability Savings Plan, or RDSP. So all those products can be really, really useful to families with people with diverse abilities, as well as people with diverse abilities themselves. So we really wanted to kind of dig into that, those products a bit more, and make sure that people were aware of them. So that it's a slightly more technical aspect of being about managing money.
Mac, thank you so much for joining us today to tell us about the program.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having us.
And thank you for the work of ABC Life Literacy Canada. It is really, really important, and we don't focus enough on it, and we don't put enough resources towards it. So amazing what you can do with the resources that you have. We appreciate it. As Canadians, we appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Mac Rogers, Executive Director of ABC Life Literacy Canada. He was here to talk about the Money Matters program for people with diverse abilities. Time now for the Moolala Questionnaire. This is our series of questions about money and a little bit about life. Jody Swain is our guest. She is the founder of the Hire and Fire Your Kids app. Jody, the first thing that comes to your mind. How would you describe your money personality?
Impulsive.
Impulsive. And twas ever thus? Were you like that way as a, were you like that as a kid?
You know what? I think I was, because I always was an entrepreneur. My parents would give me an allowance, but I always wanted more to be able to buy whatever I wanted in the moment.
Yeah.
And I was always doing crazy things like, lemonade stands and selling
what peaches. What else did you do? What was your first job? Do you remember your first job?
My first job was actually a dishwasher at a country club. But my
very glamorous
favorite job was actually the pool house at the country club. And I was actually serving liquor underage. And then I came back the next year. It was the best job ever. It was like my own little store. And they were like, how old are you? It's like, I'm 13. They were like, yeah, no, not going to happen.
That is against all laws.
And then I went back to the dishwasher job.
Right, right. Who would you say was your money mentor growing up?
Oh, my goodness. Money mentor. Probably my mom. She was a teacher. My dad was, and still is, a little more of impulsive in the moment. But my mom was sort of a teacher and I think did most of the budgeting as far as I can recall growing up. And, yeah, I use a lot of templates this day and age. I have templates.
And you credit her, but you also kind of roll your eyes with how.
Yes, I did at that time. I was like, dad's the more fun one, right?
But let's go for ice cream.
That's right.
What is one financial behavior you are still working on yourself? Or are you perfect?
No, definitely not. on perfect.
What's one you're working on?
Well, I think with this startup, the one piece is with money, right? So I took a lot of money that I actually received from Severance to put into the app, but that's come dry.
Yeah.
And so now I need to market this little app, and I'm like, where do I take it from my RESP? Like, where
you
do...
You can't take money from the RESP. It's for your children.
I know,
can't believe you brought that up. You're like, to your children, could you give me your university tuition? I'm marketing an app.
Yeah, I'm marketing an app. I swear it'll be okay. Yeah, no. So that's probably where I'm having some sort of trouble now.
What is your guiltiest spending pleasure?
Food.
Are you like restaurant food? Or are you someone who just has to have avocados?
No. I'd say restaurant. Like, I love going out to eat. I just find the environment and the social aspect is just like, I would do that every day if I could.
What is your favorite restaurant, period, full stop?
There is a restaurant in Whitby called the Nice Bistro. It is a French restaurant to die for. Yes, and it was a husband and wife. One's from Montreal, one was from somewhere in France, but I think they're just retired. I think they had the business for like 30 years, and now their children have taken it over.
Oh, fantastic.
Nice Bistro.
Love French food. When do you plan to retire, air quotes around retire, and what will you do? I know you're like, I just started this business. I'll never retire. I'm
Freedom 55? That's always been in my head. Those commercials must have been so strong way back when. 55?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
65?
You'll retire 55, 65. And what will you do?
Travel, eat. It's funny. My sister lives in British Columbia, and I think I would probably move out to the West Coast and then have a few places to visit it. In Europe.
This business has you be very, very engaged with what's going on with kids and money, with parents and money, with families and money. What is the one topic that you feel like we really need to double down and focus on that just is not getting taught, learned, or modeled?
Yeah, well, I think financial literacy in all, the one piece we were missing with the app that we didn't launch with is the actual prepaid debit card. Because in this day and age with kids, cash is going away. And so I love to be able to have a partner that when the kids get paid, they can either keep it, save it, give it. And I know your big fourth one is invest it, right? And I just think that would be such a game changer in Canada, but there's some restrictions with kids and prepaid debit cards linked to apps with the API, and there's nobody here currently that has that link to an app.
If you were to land a huge financial windfall, I'm saying $25 million.
Yes.
Aside from market your app,
yes.
What would you do with it?
Oh my gosh, that's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money, $25 million. Yeah.
I don't know. My thing always, even in work, is being able to make a difference in people's lives, right? And I have some friends that work at, I think, Woodgreen, I think it is. And I just to be able to have the power to change people's lives is probably what I would end up doing and find something close to my heart.
You're parenting all these children, as we have talked about. What is the one value about money that you really, 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 really hope decades from now you'll be able to look back and go, okay, yep, they got that. They got that.
Value about money. I think the big thing too is just so they are clear on the difference between needs and wants, which I think that they will be able to understand. But even right now, it's still interesting. Like, again, the ice cream truck came around the other day and the little one was like, the ice cream's here. Can I have my money? Go get your kids' cash. I don't know where it is. Can I use your money? No. And then she was like in tears because she had to use her kids' cash. But I don't know.
And she needs that ice cream. I'm on her side. Yeah, just like from a physiological perspective.
But you know what? 5 minutes later, it's fine. It's fine. And I just think that if they can very quickly identify at a young age needs and wants and be able to manage those needs better, I think that would be
Jody, thank beneficial. You for being here.
You're very welcome.
Jody Swain, the founder of the Hire and Fire Your Kids app. That is our show for today. You can subscribe to it on your podcast platform and feel free to write us a review. That helps the little algorithm put us out there so other people can find the show. If you have a question or a comment about today's episode, send that to via email, ask@moolala.ca, or find us on any of the social platforms, @BruceSelry on Twitter, @BruceSelryMoolala on Facebook. Now, you can also go old school and pick up one of my books online or at a library. You could pick it up at a library. First one's called Moolala, Why Smart People Do Dumb Things with Their Money and What You Can Do About It. Thanks very much for joining us and have a great day.